Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Huh? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging around with me. It's my pleasure. My websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. Hope you use those to your advantage and check it out. Use all of our stuff there. It's free. It's available to you without cost and without barrier to entry. No, you don't have to tell us who you are. You don't have to give us your email address. The only thing we will ask for is if you subscribe to my newsletter. We will need your email address because that's how we send it to you. So other than that, everything else is pretty much anonymous. Except for me, of course, you know who I am. Nikhil Galinas is someone we know as well, folks. She is the Searle Freedom Trust Fellow at the Manhattan Institute, which is an organization I'm very happy to say these guys are my friends. And then she's also contributing editor to City Journal, and she is our good friend. Nicole, welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you for having me back.
It's good to have you back. Nicole, one of the things that's been troubling me, and apparently it's been troubling you because you've written an outstanding article on this topic, and the title of your article is Criminalizing Capitalism. And I want you to talk to us a little bit about why you decided to write this article. But I want to remind people that you know, I was warning you folks about the criminalizing of capitalism and the overregulating of capitalism, which is a harness mate to the criminalization of capitalism, way back in 2002 when the government raced through in less than 90 days a bill called Sarbanes-Oxley. And we now know what kind of grief that bill hath wrought. And I don't think it's Nicole, I don't think Sarbanes-Oxley has created one layer of insulation between us and any other corporate malfeasance. What do you think?
No, and in fact, that's why I decided to write the article. I had to figure out what I was going to write for the winter issue, you know, maybe around November of last year, and that's when we were starting to have all of these mortgage-backed securities-related losses piling up at the bank, people wondering what was going on once again, and it just got me to thinking, you know, here we are, 6 years after Sarbanes-Oxley, 6 years after Enron, of course, which started it all, and we did not seem to be any better off. So I sat down and said, you know, this is what we've done is we've added this huge new criminal penalty for corporations. You know, people always talk about the civil regulatory burden of these CEOs and CFOs having to generate thousands of pages of new paperwork, which is certainly absolutely true, but the other side of that is if they sign off on internal controls that are less than representative, they could face a 20-year prison sentence. So
right.
What does that mean in the context of the mortgage crisis?
Well, the thing that and you point this out so well in your article, Nicole, is the marketplace is built on trust.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability to verify things, and if people aren't trustworthy, and if you trust someone who isn't trustworthy, and if they break the law, you know, then the things that you trusted them for are not going to work, and if you invested in them, irresponsibly or maybe inadvisedly, you're going to lose something. You're going to lose your money. They're going to lose their businesses, and if they broke the law, they're going to go to jail. I want to point out, Nicole, that every person who broke the law, every person who was involved in WorCom or Enron who is in jail now, broke laws and were prosecuted under laws that were in place before Sarbanes-Oxley.
Mm-hmm.
We already had all those things. And so the marketplace, you know, people have been, people will, no, there's no way to regulate honesty. You're not going to make people behave, everybody behave properly just because you pass a law. And so we're always going to have these kinds of problems, and the government trying to overregulate them is basically just going to shut down the economy.
Right, and it's important to remember also that, you know, people said, or the politicians and some of the pundits said after Enron, that this was a huge, unprecedented market failure, and that's why we needed this new law and all of these new regulations. But in reality, Enron was a market success in that it was the marketplace that eventually said,
right,
we're not going to put any more money in this company. And it was only after that that the regulators and prosecutors came on the scene, really, after Enron was already well on its way to spiraling into bankruptcy.
You pointed out in your article that the marketplace was already turning soft on Enron almost a year before they collapsed.
Right.
Stand by, Nicole. We're going to take a quick break, folks. We're going to be right back with Nicole Galinas, and we got more to talk about, especially what does all this have to do with you and me and our small businesses. Stay with us. We're back. 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Nicole Galinas. She is with the Manhattan Institute, and she's a contributing editor to City Journal. Nicole, I want to read something that I wrote in my article back in 02 when the Sarbanes-Oxley was passed. This is a quote from Alan Greenspan, but it was something he wrote in 1963. When he was an economist and working with Ayn Rand, and this is what the future Federal Reserve Board chairman wrote. He wrote this in 63. It is in the self-interest of every businessman to have a reputation for honest dealings and quality products. Reputation is a major competitive tool. Is that a naive statement for the 21st century, Nicole?
No, I don't think it's naive. I think we're seeing the same thing with all of these banks today. Nobody is going to trust Citibank or any of these big banks with selling them all of these mortgage-backed securities or any type of complicated securities anymore, mm-hmm, without very carefully vetting them. So they've made a huge misjudgment here, and they're going to pay for it for a long time to come.
So what you're saying is the market is regulating itself.
Sure, and of course, you know, it's not pretty sometimes. I mean, the market certainly went to excess during this mortgage and housing bubble, and now it's probably going a little bit the other way and writing too much down, expecting too many losses on these securities. But it is regulating itself, and it's doing so before the regulators. You know, regulators were saying a few years ago, well, maybe we should do something about these mortgages, but they really never quite got around to doing something about it or figured out what to do, and the market has figured it out for them.
One of the books in my library is called Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds.
Mm-hmm.
Charles McKay wrote that in 1848. And he talks about the South Sea Bubble, the Tulipomania, and the Mississippi Scheme.
Right.
And if you read those, folks, you'll think, "Wow, that sounds like the SNL crisis. That sounds like the 80s. That sounds like the junk bond crisis of the 80s. That sounds like the dot-com bombs of the 90s. That sounds like the WorldCom and Enron." And it is, Nicole. I mean, this has been going on for a long time, but the marketplace heals itself, and overregulation is not going to stop these people from if someone wants to be unethical and cheat, the regulations and marketplace and the laws, I should say, are not going to do it. It's going to take the marketplace to regulate this.
Sure, and the best thing that the marketplace can do, or that regulators can do, which they've done well, you know, for 75 years, is encourage disclosure. You know, companies,
right,
if they want to have shareholders, they have to put out a quarterly report, an annual report, and it's through these tools that investors can make up their own minds about companies. Now, of course, you can't do that perfectly. You know, if disclosure worked perfectly, we wouldn't have these crises because people would know that certain bubbles existed and that they were going to blow up. But in reality, a person who has common sense and doesn't get caught up in the herd could have known a few years ago that housing prices were way overpriced. I mean, you could just look through the newspapers and figure out that mortgages were being extended to everybody. So you had this information available to you to make your own decisions.
Well, and the thing is we've had 150 years of experience on how to lend money for mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if there's one thing that we have in the United States, it's a well-developed, fully established, fully mature capital system. And banking system, and we the rules that we've had work. And when we started breaking those rules, Nicole, we could look back on this. We could look back. In fact, I did. I remember when I first heard of 120% mortgages, where you could borrow 120% of the appraised value. And I looked and I said, you know what? That's not going to work.
Sure. I mean, the reason that banks used to request a 20% down payment was because then your house would immediately have to fall by 20% before you had any incentive to walk away.
Right.
With these 0% down, 5% down, or even, you know, negative percent down,
right,
you immediately have an incentive to walk away because you're paying for debt that's worth more than the house.
But I am still worried that the Congress is going to come in here and try to create the equivalent of a Sarbanes-Oxley for mortgages. And if that happens, God help us.
Sure, I think we'll see something like that, and I think we'll also see prosecutions of certain individuals caught up in this bubble. You know, people like some of the banking executives at some of these most aggressive banks.
Well, and if they broke laws that are on the books, they should be prosecuted.
Sure, absolutely, but the question is sometimes, you know, was the person were they acting with criminal intent, or were they just caught up in this bubble like many other people were? I mean, people think CEOs are somehow omniscient, but in reality, they can make terrible mistakes just like anybody else, and that's not always criminal.
You know, there's one thing the Europeans have an advantage over us, I think, Nicole. I was in Denmark last summer, and I saw all kinds of places where people could fall in those canals over there. And there were no fences and there were no warning signs.
Right.
And I asked the people, I said, why aren't there warning signs here? Please be careful. Don't fall in the water. You could drown and, you know, whatever, you know, all the things that we have here. And they said, you know, over here, we put the burden of responsibility on the individual. You should know that if you fall in the water, you could drown. And so that you can't prosecute over there based on something like that. And so that's an advantage I think they have over us. When we come back, we're going to talk just about how this is going to impact you and me. All this is impacting you and me and our small businesses. Stay with us. Right back with Nicole Galinas. I'm Jim Blassingame. I feel nice. We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and visiting with Nicole Galinas. She's with the Manhattan Institute and also contributing editor to City Journal. Nicole, give us your website and tell us how we can find you.
Sure. You can read my article at www.city-journal.org.
All right.
It's right in the middle of the page there.
And Manhattan Institute's website is manhattan-institute.com,
right? Exactly.
Yeah.
.org.
Right. .org. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times, Nicole, people listen to what we're talking about with regard to these publicly traded companies and all the Sarbanes-Oxley stuff and all that, and they say, well, you know what? That's big business stuff. That's not going to affect me. But all that rolls downhill to small business in many ways. For example, the Sarbanes-Oxley stuff created an incredible inflation and increased cost for auditing.
Right.
It created a lot of extra work for auditors, and that made accounting less available and auditing less available to smaller businesses, and it made it all more expensive
right
for everybody.
And I think another thing is that if you're not a publicly traded company, but you would like to be one sometime, it really creates a big obstacle to going public, because you have to, it's such a huge added cost burden. You know, it's hard for investors to figure out what's their exit strategy.
I've got a friend, Nicole, who was supposed to, who went public in 96, and his business is now the top business in his industry. He's got over $1 billion in capitalization, and he's just doing, they're just doing great. But I asked him on my show a year or so ago, I said, if Sarbanes-Oxley, if you were trying to go public today, would you be able to? He said, no, I would not be able to go public today, like I did in 96. Now, I wonder how many stories there are out there like that. In fact, Nicole, I actually know two companies that went, two smaller publicly traded companies that took themselves back private because of Sarbanes-Oxley.
And I think they also have to worry about the criminal burden, because say, you know, you're saying, well, my company doesn't do anything bad, so I don't have to worry. But the problem is, if the government is looking for a bigger company, if they've got somebody else targeted and maybe you did some deals with them or trading with them or so forth, they can use all of these tools to go after you and, you know, really pressure you to make you testify, do all kinds of things, because the company knows if it's indicted, that's really the death sentence
right,
for that company.
Right. Well, and the other thing about small businesses, how this filters down to small businesses, Nicole, the more our politicians get their meat hooks into the marketplace, the more they think that they can overregulate the marketplace, they can regulate the marketplace, the more all of these regulations filter down either directly or indirectly onto small business owners. And it's actually, it winds up being just adding a heavy weight on the overall performance of the marketplace, doesn't it?
Right, absolutely, because people don't make decisions sometimes for their own best economic interests. They're making them with all of these regulations in mind.
Well, and also when you get to the point where investors, when investors, this is another thing, that this criminalization thing is, when investors believe that rather than doing their own due diligence, they'll just turn to lawyers to make them whole. That's a bad attitude for capitalism, isn't it?
Sure, and that's maybe the most important point of my article, that, you know, if you, Enron taught the public the wrong lesson. If you're a small investor and you're thinking, well, I saw these people go off to jail, so I don't have to worry about my own investments, because I know that if people do wrong, they'll be prosecuted. But in reality, the best thing you can do for yourself is not have more than a few percentage points of your portfolio in any one company or industry. And that way, if the company is doing something wrong, you may lose some money and you'll be mad, but you're not going to lose all of your life savings.
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, there are some things that need to be regulated. There are some things that need to have oversight. And there's plenty of that that was already in place in the marketplace. And
oh, absolutely.
The main thing I worry about, Nicole, I'm convinced that the members of our government, the members of Congress, as a group in mass, really don't understand how the marketplace works, the public marketplace or the private marketplace.
They don't understand how it works.
And when they react with these regulations, that's when it's troubling. So, folks, we've got Sarbanes-Oxley. There's not anything we can do about that now, I think. But be careful and watch out for what they may be about to do to the mortgage industry, because that could affect all of us directly.
Mm-hmm.
Nicole, thank you for being here. Good job today, as always.
Oh, thank you.
We'll see you next time. Nicole Galinas, ladies and gentlemen, with the Manhattan Institute and City Journal. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.